front pages. For the next hour, Chris will bring you the front page news from the morning newspapers. The latest headlines from around the state and around the rest of the world.
Good morning. Today is Friday, July 7th. I'm Bill Murphy, and I'm going to be reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times. On the board today is Keith Sullivan. He'll be keeping us on the air, giving us the local weather in a few minutes. And we'll start with a couple of stories from the New York Times on the front page. Tiny satellites will track North Korea missiles. That's the headline. 4 years before North Korea fired its first intercontinental ballistic missile this week, the Pentagon and intelligence experts had sounded a warning. Not only was the North making progress quickly, spy satellite coverage was so spotty that the United States might not see a missile before being prepared for launch. And that set off an urgent but quiet search for ways to improve America's early warning ability and the capability to strike missiles when they are on the launch pad. The most intriguing solutions have come from Silicon Valley, where the Obama administration began investing in tiny, inexpensive civilian satellites developed to count cars in target parking lots and monitor the growth of crops. Some in the Pentagon, accustomed to relying on highly classified multi-billion dollar satellites, which takes years to develop, resisted the move. But as North Korea's missile program progressed, American officials laid out an ambitious schedule for the first of the small satellites to go up at the end of this year or the beginning of next. Launched in clusters, some staying in orbit just a year or two, the satellites would provide coverage necessary to execute a new military contingency plan called Kill Chain. It is the first step in a new strategy to use satellite imagery to identify North Korean launch sites, nuclear facilities, and manufacturing capability and destroy them preemptively if a conflict seems imminent. Even a few extra minutes of warning might save the lives of tens of thousands of Americans and millions of South Koreans and Japanese who already live within the range of the North's missiles. Kim Jong-un is racing, literally racing, to deploy a missile capability. Robert Cardillo, the director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which coordinates satellite-based mapping for the government, said in an interview days before North Korea's latest launch, "His acceleration has caused us to accelerate." The timeline for getting these satellites in orbit, which defense officials have never discussed publicly, reflects the urgency of the problem. The missile launch by North Korea on Tuesday was initiated from a new site, a mobile launcher at the Pyongyang Aircraft Factory. Captain Jeff Davis, a Pentagon spokesman, said the missile is, quote, "not the one we have seen before." That mobility is the problem that the new satellites with wide coverage using radar sensors that work at night and during storms are designed to address. Less than one-third of North Korea is under spy satellite coverage at a given moment. American intelligence analysts detected indications of an impending launch in the days before the missile firing, according to a spokesman for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Commander William Marks. But even after the launch, the Pentagon misjudged what it was looking at. Minutes after its 37-minute flight ended, the United States Pacific Command described the missile as an intermediate-range model often seen. Hours later, Secretary of State Rex W. Tillerson issued a very different conclusion that the North had tested its first intercontinental ballistic missile able to reach Alaska. The commercial radar push is one of several new ways the administration is seeking to counter the North Korean threat. President Trump inherited a secret effort to sabotage the North's missile launches, but its success has been spotty at best, especially of late. And joint American South Korean missile tests conducted hours after the ICBM test appeared to be part of the new strategy that includes Kill Chain. The missiles were designed to reach Pyongyang, where the country's leadership lives. Kill Chain was also mentioned in a joint statement issued last week by the United States and South Korea, a notable shift for the South's new president, Moon Jae-in. He has rejected public discussion of preemptive military action arguing it plays into the North Korean paranoia that the United States and its allies are plotting to end the Kim government. Mr. Moon has spoken of reviving direct talks, a so-called sunshine policy, which he advocated as chief of staff to an earlier South Korean president. But Mr. Trump has tried to build pressure using warships, sanctions, and missile defenses. He was recently presented with new options, including military ones, for responding to a sixth nuclear detonation by the North or a test of a missile that could reach the United States. The threat is much more immediate, H.R. McMaster, Mr. Trump's national security advisor, told a conference last week at the Center for a New American Security in Washington. So it's clear that we can't repeat the same approach, failed approach of the past. The new satellite initiative builds on technology created more for Wall Street than the Pentagon from an office in an old Defense Department building within view of the Google campus in California. Raj Shah, the director of the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, or DIUX, is already investing in companies that exploit tiny civilian radar satellites able to pierce darkness or storms in hopes that the Pentagon can use them by the end of the year or early in 2018. It's a very challenging target, said Mr. Shah, a former F-16 pilot in Iraq whose extensive experience in Silicon Valley appealed to Defense Secretary Ashton B. Carter, who set up a unit during Mr. Obama's second term and recruited Mr. Shah. The key is using technologies that are already available and making the modifications we need for a specific military purpose, Mr. Shah said. And I apologize at the very beginning of the broadcast. I did not describe the pictures on the front pages of each of the papers, so I'll do that now. On the front page of the Times, there's a picture of Melania Trump, the First Lady, waving to a crowd in Krasinski Square in Warsaw after introducing President Trump on Thursday. On the side, there's a picture of President Trump at the microphone at the presidential podium, ready to give his speech, and she is walking past a couple of statues. I don't know who they would be of, with a beautiful blue and red dress and red shoes on, with her hand in the air and waving with a smile on her face. The second picture is, and we're not going to have a story on this, is a picture of a ferry in Seastrick. It must be in, I think it's in New Jersey. And it's a picture of the ferry commuting to Hoboken, New Jersey. Picture of a lady, Gabrielle Perone, is on board on her commute. So I think the story's about comparing rail service with subsidizing a ferry for just a few people who use it. We won't have that story. Going to the Currents picture on the front page is a picture of a sailor, Jeffrey Salzer of VFW Post 5157, laying a wreath on the Oakville Green in Watertown Thursday at the foot of the U.S. Navy flag in memory of Ngoc, that's N-G-O-C, Tan Trung Huynh, it's H-U-Y-N-H, who's a 25-year-old Navy sailor who was among seven killed June 17th in a collision between the USS Fitzgerald and a Philippine container ship off the coast of Japan. He was a graduate of Watertown High School, and there's a picture of Mr. Salzer kneeling down, putting the flowers near a Connecticut flag with other soldiers, military people in the background holding various flags, American flags, Connecticut flags, VFW flags, and a couple of sailors standing adjacent to Mr. Salzer as he lays the wreath down. I believe that we are going to have the story on that a little bit later in the broadcast. And we'll go back to the stories now in the New York Times. This one from Warsaw. In speech, Trump asks if West has will to survive. President Trump said on Thursday that Western civilization was at risk of decline, bringing a message of radical Islamic terrorism and the creep of government bureaucracy to a European capital he views as hospitable to his national message. Mr. Trump, who broke with tradition by attacking American leaders and his country's intelligence services while abroad, delivered his message in a speech to a friendly Polish crowd before a two-day summit meeting of group of 20 leaders in Hamburg, Germany. Hours later, he flew from Warsaw to Hamburg, where he held a low-key private meeting with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who perhaps best symbolizes the deep skepticism shared by Western leaders toward Mr. Trump's persona and his policies, ranging from addressing climate change to confronting Russia. In what may be a foretaste of the scene during the gathering, 12,000 protesters vowing to disrupt the G20 summit meeting converged for a demonstration in Hamburg on Thursday night called Welcome to Hell. There were reports that dozens of police officers suffered minor injuries as a small group of protesters attacked them with bottles, poles, and iron bars in clashes that lasted until midnight. Up to 100,000 protesters were expected in the coming days. Mr. Trump roused his Polish host by recounting the country's history of resistance to invaders, including Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, but he said nothing about the right-wing government's crackdown on judges and journalists and its refusal to accept more migrants, policies that have upset European Union leaders. He insisted, praised Poland as a defender of liberty in the face of existential threats. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive, he said. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? Pressed at a news conference earlier in the day about Russian interference in the American election, he said that nobody really knows if other countries might have been involved. He blamed President Barack Obama for not responding publicly after Mr. Obama learned about reports of possible election meddling this summer. Mr. Trump, who is under pressure to confront Mr. Putin during their first face-to-face meeting in Hamburg on Friday over his attempts to sway the election, delivered a mixed message to Russia. The president made his sharpest criticism of Moscow since taking office.